Welcome to the Living Dream Podcast. This is Janos, and I'm here tonight with Neil Piper, also the founder of Living the Dream, a slightly different one. Our paths crossed through some good internet domain hunting, and we decided to catch up and see what each other were up to. And it turns out Neil has got a pretty odd that involves him traveling around the world and learning how people in all seven continents live the dream. And so, Neil, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be on your show today.
Sure thing. Well, I'm going to let you explain what living the dream / the LTD experience is all about.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having me on. You know, really the mission of Living the Dream is our goal really is to inspire people to live out their personal dreams in life, and as well to find people that are really doing extraordinary things in their life, different than kind of the 9-to-5 that a lot of people typically fall into, to kind of inspire other people to kind of follow their passions, their dreams in life. And kind of on a sidebar, we are also trying to help disadvantaged people around the world live out their dreams. So our mission is to find out what living a dream means in every country in the world. So we're actually currently now getting ready to we just got back from India, Thailand, and Cambodia, and we're going to be uploading some great stories there. And then we're getting ready now to go to South America to do a 4-to-5-month tour down there to discover what living a dream means in South America.
That's awesome. That's South America is certainly my favorite continent to do that. There, you'll have some awesome experiences. We talked about some of the countries you're going to be going to, Peru, Bolivia. For those who go to livingthedream.org, if you look at the top banner on the page, that's actually a picture from the Bolivian salt flats. So definitely some of the more beautiful places in the world in South America. One question I had when I was reading about your mission and looking at the countries you've been to, including a lot of countries in Africa, when you go to more remote places in the world, places that aren't as spoiled by traditional Western consumer culture, tell us about some of the more different living the dream goals that some of the more unique goals, I guess, that you've come across when people say they want to live the dream. You know, something beyond like becoming a rich, you know, rock star. You know, what are some of the more interesting things that you've experienced when you go to less Western, less industrialized parts of the world?
Well, we were in Cambodia in February, and one of my goals was to meet up with a Buddhist monk. So we were at one of the temples near Angkor Wat, it was actually a really cool backdrop. It was where Tomb Raider was filmed, one of the, you know, forget the name of the temple for some reason, but it's got all the trees going through. So we had a Buddhist monk travel a few hundred miles, actually, to come in and interview. We had a translator there as well. But what we really wanted to know is, as you know, in Cambodia, there was a, you know, mass genocide just recently in our lifetime, you know, even, you know, less than 10 years ago. His family was impacted by that genocide. So we wanted to know kind of the impact that made on him and why he is becoming a Buddhist monk. And, you know, that's one of his big dreams in life is to, you know, be enlightened and be able to enlighten others. And so this monk was following his dream of that. Came from a very poor background. They made less than $5 a day. So he's following his dream simply by, you know, stopping everything in life and taking this time to become a monk. And it was just a very enlightening interview. We'll be releasing that one shortly. But, you know, you find even in Africa, I was in Africa for 7 months. And I was doing actually development work there, and that's when I started living the dream. This is about 2 years ago. And what you find there is that when you strip away all the materialistic stuff that we have in life, is, you know, what are the core basics that you really need in life to live a fulfilled life? There's research that's out there that shows you know, a certain income level, which is around, I believe, around $30,000 a year in U.S. standards. Is that if you make anything over there, if you have the basic needs and necessities in life, making more doesn't necessarily bring more joy and happiness. And I've seen a lot in the countries in Africa that I've visited. you find that, you know, you'll go to a rural village where people are living in mud huts, but, you know, these kids, these families, they have these huge smiles on their face. And yet they're running around, you know, in the neighborhood with these wire trucks that they built and pushing them around. They don't have, you know, a room for their toys like we do here in the States. Mm-hmm. But yet they have this sense of happiness and joy. And I think a lot of times if you strip away the technology, you strip away the things that pull us away from building relationships, strong relationships with each other, you find that there's, you know, these people have a lot of joy and happiness in their lives. So I would definitely say in the developing world, we get some very unique stories that I think a lot of people really get inspired by these because they get a better feel that you don't need a lot of money to live your dream in life. A lot of times it's just the core basics in life.
And that's something that I can definitely relate to as well from my own trip to Africa when I was in Liberia, particularly out in the rural countryside. Do you feel like that also applies, however, in the cities where there's more exposure to Western culture and there's more of a in-your-face sense of having and not having? You know, I feel like when I was in Monrovia, the capital, for example, you know, there was a real prevalence of Western media and Western material goods. And so all of a sudden, if you didn't have that, you felt poor. Whereas if you're in the rural areas, you know, like you said, the most important thing is the community, your family, the soccer games you do together as a big group. You know, so did you sense that there is that kind of dichotomy as well?
Yeah, I do. And I think it depends on the person as well. We did an interview. We were in Canada back in June, and there was a German couple, Gunnar and Vanita, I believe was her name. They had moved from Germany. They had a castle in their family that was this five-star hotel for many years, and their kids, Gunnar wasn't seeing his two children very much, and found himself working all the time. He had all the money he could ever need. And they decided to sell everything and move to this small town outside of Burnstown in Ontario, which has about 85 people in population. So they moved there and they built a sustainable farm, opening a catering business because his background was in hospitality, and mm-hmm. and truly are living a life of having very little, you know, a minimalistic life. And he said it was one of the best things that ever happened to him. It's probably one of the most unique people I've met in all of my travels. And it just has really brought his family, a lot closer together. And they have, you know, their stress levels been cut down significantly. So I think a lot of times taking that leap in life, is sometimes the best thing that happens to people. And but I agree. I think everybody's definition of living the dream is different, and that's why we're so interested about this project and what we're trying to accomplish is to kind of show different angles of what living the dream means, not just climbing the corporate ladder or you know, jet setting around the world and you know, having a BMW or Mercedes. That's not necessarily exactly what we're looking for. We're looking for, you know, people that are doing extraordinary things regardless of the adversity that they faced and how it's impacted their lives, the lives of others, and we're also looking for people that are doing extraordinary things for others as well, to help them live out their own personal dreams in life. But you're right, everybody has a different definition. That's what makes this project so interesting for us.
So tell us about maybe some of the projects then that you've seen where people are, I guess, doing nonprofits, NGOs. You know, what are some of the more original, innovative ones that you've come across?
Yeah, well, there's an orphanage in Swaziland. There was a lady. Swaziland has the highest population of HIV in the world. It's around 26%. And there's a lady there in Swaziland who was a nurse. She was an expat from the United States and moved to be a nurse in Swaziland to kind of just follow her passion of doing development work. And next thing you know, she sees all these children whose parents, passed of HIV. So these became orphans. And A lot of these orphan children, the orphanages are just, it's horrible, some of the conditions that they live in. So she started adopting children. Next thing you know, she had about eight children under the age of 8 years old, and left the nursing role and started an orphanage in Swaziland. And it's called the Sandra Lee Center. And now this orphanage has, I believe, about 45 children. And each of the homes that she's built, her and her husband, through donations, they have a maka, which is essentially a mother, a local Swazi woman who kind of controls that house or is responsible for the children. So there's a small amount of children in each home, so they all have personal opportunities to kind of feel like they have their own mother. But it's just amazing to see the courage of this woman and, you know, the sacrifice that she's made to kind of take that leap of faith, kind of what we were talking about earlier, from what you could call the easy life, probably in the States or more in the developing type world, and going somewhere like that to give everything up, just to fall in love with these children and do something to you know, give them a hope in their life. And so that's probably one of the better projects that we've seen so far.
Cool, cool. Now, I see you've been to Egypt. Were you there before or after the Arab Spring?
We were there just before. We were there in the late part of 2009. So we missed all the chaos that was taking place there. Be interesting now to go back and kind of see the difference in perspective of what's taken place.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So tell me more. I like stories, and people who read and read what I write on the blog and listen to the podcast know I love rambling stories myself. So tell me about some of your favorite personal experiences, things that you've enjoyed the most in these adventures. And in fact, you can even back up and say, you know, what was the first trip abroad that really made you think about wanting to travel to every country in the world?
I think living in Africa was, for me, the big paradigm shift. I was in corporate America in the pharmaceutical industry, and loved my job. I loved my career, and that's part of the reason why I originally moved to Swaziland for that time, is to partner with an NGO to help build sustainable healthcare systems. And while I was there, I was the guy that had, the nice car, you know, full closet of suits and clothes. And when I got over there, I think I had carried two large suitcases and another carry-on, way more than I needed for the period of time I was there. And by the time I got back, I think I had most of my luggage stolen on one flight from Namibia to South Africa. And I got back, and I literally for just a couple months had a carry-on suitcase with, you know, just very limited amount of stuff. And I got back and looked at my clothes, and I was just kind of sick to my stomach on how much of, you know, we all accumulate a lot in life, right? And, and just looking at the clothes of how much I had and where I was living in a village where, you know, the common staple dish is granulated maize, where children would maybe get a helping or two a day of this. And so it was, I think that for me was the big change in what made me want to continue traveling. It was some of the happiest times for me is living abroad and living in this environment where, you know, relationships are valued and more than probably a lot of countries, just due to because everybody's busy, right? It's hard to even schedule appointments with friends and go out for dinner, right? So so for me, coming back and, you know, experiencing that culture made me want to, you know, take this project forward. And you know, it's a big, ambitious goal to go to every country. So, but one of the ways that we're also trying to, you know, in the meantime, learn is, on our website, we just launched a online community so that people can actually post their own stories. So we've been reaching out to different people through our Twitter our Twitter page and our Facebook page to post stories. So we're hopeful that People will start posting those soon to kind of help, you know, expedite the process to kind of on this discovery and this adventure. So
tell me more about how that interactive aspect works. So it would be people posting their own stories abroad or their own interviews with, you know, folks, actually locals who live abroad? How would that work?
Well, it can be both. So some of the people that we have as followers on Twitter are just journalists or you know, writers or bloggers, and they are interested in finding people in their local community who are living their dream in life. And then you've got others that are currently doing what they love outside of what we would think of as the normal 9-to-5 job, or whether that is that they've started an orphanage or went into the Peace Corps and now are doing something that, you know, help in development work or some other aspect. So we have both. So we have people that are interested in writing about others in the community, and then people that are currently living out their dreams that want to share their story. So our goal is to really have a platform, a kind of more ground-level media to bring inspiring stories. Because as you know, when you look at the news, there's not a whole lot out there these days that is very inspiring and positive. It's usually negative type media, and I think that's what draws a lot of people in, you know, the drama of that. But our goal really is to bring more of an inspiring aspect for people to want to come and check the site and kind of think differently about their own life after they come and read our stories.
Yeah, the negative stories in the news the last couple of days are actually interesting, because it's about really the interconnectedness of the world right now, and the reason that people are so stressed out about what's happening in a country like Greece or Italy is because it could affect the banking systems in Europe, which could affect the banking system here, which could affect our economy here. So that's kind of a negative example of how we're all interconnected, but there's also a lot of positive ways that it's much easier to connect around the world than ever before, which plays right into your site and the work of a lot of good NGOs, right? In that probably if you had done, you know, a project similar to this 10 or 15 years ago, you'd never be able to really, you know, email your, you know, somebody you met in Namibia and say, hey, look, this interview's up on the site. Hope you're doing well, or, you know, or something like that.
It's changed everything. It really has. And, I mean, even looking at 4 or 5 years ago where, you know, even a couple of years ago where we couldn't check email on a device or go online on a device. And, you know, we're seeing this interconnectedness all around the world now. Even in countries like Africa where, you know, farmers now can have a cell phone and have an application to help them build their business. Mm-hmm. You know, in areas where they kind of skipped the landlines, where they didn't even have a landline, but now they all
right.
have mobile technology, mobile banking. It's changed the world, and it's changed the way that we think and do things. And kind of going back to that interconnectedness as well, is that it's interesting is that when there is a negative event that does happen in the world, is how people come together. You know, with the earthquake in Haiti, or mm-hmm. you know, the tsunami that took place in, you know, in Southeast Asia. You know, when big tragic events happen, it's interesting that there is a lot of positive things. There's a lot of positive people. People, you know, want to help others and have a passion for helping others, and it's seen in these types of events. And I'm happy to be in a time and in life that we have all this great technology, because it has made a big difference.
And that segues into something I was going to ask you about, since you've been on the ground and seen a lot of NGOs working in Africa and Asia in the last couple years. Do you feel like the evolution of technology is helping NGOs decentralize and allowing you know, sort of social entrepreneurs to start their own programs with more flexibility, whether it's I don't know if Kickstarter is really used in the NGO community, but certainly you can fundraise now for your own relatively small project easier than you could in the past, and you may not have to rely on applying to, you know, big institutions for grants, which was kind of the old model.
Yeah, I agree. I think some of these models are helping out tremendously. I think Kickstarter is one of them, probably more on a micro level. On a macro level, we are seeing a lot of larger investments coming through, especially with farming in Africa and creating sustainable farming systems, and even in some of the micro banking, the micro loans that are being given out. There's a lot of systems that are being developed that based off technology is really helping helping these areas thrive. And as well, I think NGOs are working together a lot more now due to technology and people being able to communicate more efficiently. And so we're seeing a big change right now, I think, in the way that work is done in kind of the developing type sector.
Have you seen Kiva in action? I guess I don't know if you'd know if you were seeing Kiva in action, but I guess I've gotten involved with that recently. I'm just kind of curious to see if there's feedback on the ground about it.
I haven't. I'm familiar with it, but I haven't seen that in use yet. And I'd be interested because there's a lot of great projects that are funded out of these type websites, but I haven't seen it in action yet.
Cool. So South America is next. And tell me, so Antarctica would be your seventh continent if you can pull that off?
It will be. So I will fly out actually Thanksgiving morning. So I'll land in Cartagena, Colombia, and then from there travel through Colombia, go to Ecuador, to the Galapagos Islands, and then from there go south to Peru. Bolivia, Chile, Argentina, and then hopefully get to Antarctica, which will be my seventh continent. It's an ambitious trip because, as you know, Antarctica, February, March would be the optimal time to get there due to weather reasons and as well to see kind of more wildlife. So the great thing about Antarctica, if you book online ahead of time, it's really expensive, but you make it to the port. I'm forgetting the name of it off the top of my head. It's the most southern city, I believe, in the world, down in Argentina. But you can get these trips. You can just talk to the captain last minute and get on these boats for, probably 90% off the price of what you'd pay online if you booked ahead of time. So I am traveling on a budget. And, in South America, you can typically travel, depending on which country, but on average probably – around $30 to $40 a day, so approximately $1,000 to $1,200 a month. So it's very reasonable, as you know, traveling. I believe you said yourself through South America, you can go through on a reasonable budget. So, I've been learning Spanish. I took it in high school, but I'm not a huge language person. If I'm doing interviews, a lot of times I've got a translator. So I'm actually doing this trip solo up front, and I think diving into the culture and picking up Spanish. I think picking up Spanish would be the most difficult thing, but I think when you dive into a culture where it's either you learn it or you don't, you pick it up really quickly. So I'll have some challenges that I face, but I'm really excited to see how people are living the dream there. I know it's going to be a unique perspective from anywhere I've been. And I'm just truly excited to meet some fantastic people when I get to travel through there.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, there's no doubt you'll have a great time. And do make sure that you hit up those salt flats because I think that's maybe the coolest place I've ever seen on Earth, although Peru has plenty to brag about as well. And I'm sure Antarctica may top all that once you get there. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us. The website, we should say what the website is. It's ltdexperience.com, and we'll put a link to it up on our site as well. And I wish you happy travels, man, and keep us, I guess anybody can follow along with the on your site, but maybe when you get back we can do a little recap podcast as well.
Yeah, that'd be great, and love what you guys are doing. Sounds like you're definitely living your dream in life, and really wish you the best as well. Look forward to following along and seeing new stories as you guys post as well. And you guys need anything, let me know anytime, okay?
Sure thing. Take care, man.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.